welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at redrock_bball. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/redrockbasketball. The email address is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. And there is the YouTube channel, which you can check out the links to that on the website and on my Twitter profile and on Facebook and all those different places. So check that out. It is growing slowly. So thank you to everyone who's headed across and then checked out what's happening on YouTube. Just a quick programming note. By the time you listen to this podcast, I won't have it recorded, but I will be in almost ready to record a podcast with Ed Isaacson, who works with Roto World. He's an NBA draft expert, works at NBC Sports, has his own website, the NBA Draft Blog as well. So he's going to be on the podcast soon. So if you do have any questions draft related, we can me and Ed can cover those in the podcast, which will be coming out soon after you listen to this. But today we're doing another of the season in review podcasts, and today we're covering the Los Angeles Clippers.
Are there Asian girls here? Minority Report. Put your team on the map. Blake Griffin on the court. Niggas biting on my tracks.
Yes, Blake Griffin is on the court, and there were some funny rumors going around in the not in the off season, but we're still during the season, but during the playoffs about the Clippers exploring a trade to trade Blake Griffin for Kevin Durant. There is pretty much zero chance of that happening. But the Clippers did execute a trade today. You'll probably listen to this podcast. Well, I know you listen to this podcast a day after that trade's happened, because I am recording it in advance for you to peek behind the curtain. But the trade has just gone down with the Clippers and the Hornets. And I'm not going to talk about Lance Stephenson in this podcast, but I will talk about Matt Barnes and Spencer Hawes. But I'll say this about Stephenson. Just because he's coming to the Clippers, he's not going to be fantasy relevant, I don't think. He thrived in Indiana when he was basically the number two option. It was Paul George and him. He played a lot of his time with the second unit as a ball handler, but even as in the first team, he was the ball handler. George Hill did basically nothing in that season. He would bring the ball and then just give it to George or give it to Stephenson. Now, Lance didn't play his entire time with the second unit, so we can't imagine that's what he's going to do here in LA, although their second unit does need help. But he's got to share the ball with Chris Paul. He's got to share it with Blake Griffin. He was putrid basically every season in his career, apart from that one year in Indiana. He was just brutal. He's an overrated fantasy prospect, even at his best. I don't think that he cracks the top 100 again. He's not the second option on this team. There's Paul, there's Griffin, there's JJ Redick. Jamal Crawford on the bench is going to want to get his shots and want to get his looks. I don't really know what this trade accomplishes for the Clippers. It's an odd fit. He can't hit threes. He's a decent ball handler, but does this impact Austin Rivers' time with the Clippers? Do they not re-sign him? Do they not look to develop him as a backup point? Look, Lance can play a bit of that, but Chris Paul's going to be playing 35 minutes a night. What's Stephenson going to get? 15 minutes handling the ball? Maybe 10 minutes? Jamal Crawford will handle the ball some as well. We know that Crawford likes to do all those crossover moves, so he's going to handle the ball too. So Stephenson's value comes from the fact that he gets assists as a shooting guard. He gets no steals, no blocks, bad percentages, no free throw percentages, no three-pointers. He doesn't do a huge amount from a fantasy point of view, and he's not in a great situation. It's a pretty odd trade to me. As bad as Spencer Hawes was last season, and as bad as Matt Barnes was at times, Barnes can at least hit threes. Barnes can at least help space the floor. Stephenson can't. He needs the ball in his hand, and he's not getting it in his hand for majority of the game. So that is a concern. So I'm not running in a dynasty league to go and I'm going to get Lance Stephenson. But if someone wants to get Lance Stephenson off you in a dynasty and thinks, yes, he's returning to Lance Stephenson of old, which people think have this odd thought process of Stephenson of, oh, remember how good Stephenson was? He was the best player. He had the most triple-doubles. Yeah, that's great, but it doesn't mean anything in fantasy unless you're in a triple-double league. He wasn't a top 50 player in that season. He was outside the top 200 last year, and he's just not going to be, I don't think he's going to be a top 100 player. I don't think he's going to be a standard league player. I could be wrong, and it's obviously very early on before drafts, and there's a lot of stuff to go down, but I don't see a big bounce back for Lance at all. Let's get on to the Clippers players now who actually were there last season, or I hate saying last season because we've still got a couple of games to go in the NBA playoffs, maybe only one game, maybe two games, but we're still a little way to go, but the Clippers season is finished. Let's talk about the players that you know, propelled them to a number three seed, an upset first round victory, a collapse against the Rockets. Let's start with Chris Paul, a guy who's unfairly maligned throughout the NBA for, you know, choker tags and all this sort of stuff. It is bullshit. He is very, very good. We know he's very good. He ended up with a real surprising fantasy season, to be honest, and a lot of that's tied to the fact that he played every game, something he hasn't been able to do for a very long time. He played 35 minutes a game, 82 minutes a game. He was the third-ranked player in head-to-head leagues total value, same in roto value. Per game, it slips a little bit down to number five, but he was still awesome. And I imagine you're going to be able to get him outside the top five next season as well, and it will probably end up being a little bit of a bargain. In head-to-head per game value, he was the number three player after the All-Star break. So he was still putting up great numbers. He averaged 19 and 10. He hit over 1.5 threes. He grabbed 4.5 rebounds, 2 steals, shot 49 and 90%. They are absolutely tremendous numbers from Chris Paul, and the only thing that tends to sidetrack him are injuries. And that's a definite risk. Now, he went through unscathed last season. He might miss 10 games next season. But it's hard for me to advocate picking him inside the top five. But if you're picking at 6 or 7, you're going to be able to probably get Chris Paul, and it's going to be a huge result. And he's going to end up outproducing one of those guys who's picked ahead of him. There's almost no doubt about it. So his value remains sky high. He's just a constant source of assists. We know that. But it's the 2 steals, the 1.5 threes, 19 points, 4.5 rebounds. Those insane percentages. He just puts up big numbers after big numbers, and he's superb. We know that he's superb. Let's look at the other point guard on the roster, and that is Austin Rivers, a player who is maligned a lot. I'll use that word again, but he is just brutalized basically throughout the NBA community. But there were times when he had decent games from a fantasy point of view. Now, sometimes it's really hard to watch him on the court. We don't know if he'll ever be a good player, but there are times when he was a guy that you wanted to use. He was a must-own guy or must-play guy in daily fantasy leagues for big stretches. He ended up averaging 21 minutes a game this season, only gives you 7 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, half a 3, half a steal, but it's not completely horrible. It wasn't completely horrible at times. Now, per game, that only equates to 339th in the league, so that's not good at all, but he had stretches where you got, maybe he's not a complete write-off. Now, he is an unrestricted free agent. I mentioned that before. You would think with the Clippers acquiring him in that trade, Doc being the coach, they're going to want to re-sign him. And they did see, they saw signs of development from him, especially throughout the playoffs. So he was a lot better throughout the playoffs and towards the end of the season than what we'd seen from him at any stage in his career. I don't think he's ever going to be a good player. I don't think he's ever going to be a top 200 fantasy player, but he'll be a guy that at times, and if there is a situation when Paul gets injured, like we saw in the playoffs when Paul missed those couple of games with that hamstring problem, Rivers started and he put up pretty decent numbers, and that's what you'd expect in a fantasy league. If Rivers happened to have to start for an extended stretch of time, he would get the bump in value. Now, in that situation with Stevenson there, then Stevenson would also get a bump in value because he would be handling the ball more. It still doesn't mean that I love him as a player or anything like that, but his value would become into a situation where you'd want to own him in standard leagues. Jamal Crawford's another player for the Clippers who's listed as a point guard. He's not really a point guard, but as I mentioned before, he does handle the ball a lot, does all those crossovers, he shoots a lot. He's a pretty good head-to-head player, I'll put it that way. He's the 79th ranked player in head-to-head leagues. Much worse in Roto because of that really poor field goal percentage. He shot 40% on 13 shot attempts in a game, which is not great. He still averaged 16 points in 27 minutes, 2 triples, 2.5 assists, a steal, and a 90% free throw rate. The Clippers had 3 guys shoot over 90% from the free throw line, which is that's not even including CJ Wilcox, who shot 100%. I'm talking regular players, JJ Redick, Jamal Crawford, and Chris Paul, who all shot over 90% from the free throw line, which is a pretty rare sort of feat. But Crawford looked like he was tailing off, looked like he was regressing somewhat, you know, over the hill to a degree. Now, he only played 64 games, almost missed 20 games with that calf problem. If he is back fit and firing, you think that you can pencil him in for a top 90, top 100 type of season as that guy who gives you threes, gives you a good amount of points at the end of the draft where it's hard to find that, and gives you that high free throw percentage, but know that you're going to cop a hit in the field goal percentage department. The 2.5 assists is not too bad either. It's not fantastic, but it's not horrible. So he has a little bit of value in from that point of view. Let's talk JJ Redick now, who was a really important player for this team, but he was exceptional down the stretch. He ended up being ranked 73rd in head-to-head value, But post All-Star break, he was the 32nd ranked player. He was absolutely tremendous. He averaged over 2.5 triples a game, 16.5 points a game. Not much else, but for a guy who's giving you that amount of points and that amount of three-pointers, he shot 48% from the field, much like Chris Paul, 90% from the free throw line. And the fact that it's just 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and 0.5 steals, there's not a lot there, but that's a big amount of three-pointers. That's good points, and they are great percentages for that. So he's a player that ranking post All-Star was, it's high. You're not taking him at 30, obviously. That position where he's, you know, came in over the season, ranked at 73rd in head-to-head per game value, that's more the style you want to look at. But he averaged 19.5 points those last 2 months, 3 triples a game, 3 rebounds, and shot 49% and 96%. So that's why he was up so high, because he was on a hot streak, but it wasn't a short-term hot streak. This is 28 games worth of hot streak. He was absolutely fantastic for this team. And he was a big reason they remained strong all throughout the season. And I don't think much is going to change. They're not going to want to give Stevenson minutes over JJ Redick. I can't see that. If they do, then Doc Rivers has lost the plot completely. There is no chance that they'll be doing that. JJ Redick is a very, very important part of this team. Now, the other shooting guards on this team, there's a lot of crap there, to be honest. It's not good to look at. Dante Jones, who's an unrestricted free agent. The only reason we talk about Dante Jones is for that issue he had with bumping into Draymond Green, so we can ignore him. He's lucky to be in the league, and that's how bad the Clippers bench was. Lester Hudson's a guy that, when he gets minutes, he can produce, you know, not bad numbers. Now, he is signed for next season. We don't think we need to be too concerned about what he's going to provide. He only played 5 games, but he had 3.5 points in 11 minutes. He gave you an assist and 1.2 steals, so that's some pretty decent numbers there in that limited time frame. But he's going to be behind Rivers. He's going to be behind Stevenson in terms of ball handling, you know, and ball handling priority. So I don't think we need to worry too much about Lester Hudson. Another guy they had on their roster last season was Jordan Hamilton, who did play for Denver earlier in the season. He is signed on for another year as well. He's a guy that I like when he can get big minutes, but he's just not in a situation here where he can get big minutes. So I don't think we need to be too enamored with anything he brings. He just averaged 2.5 points last season on 40% shooting, gave you just over a rebound a game, and 0.73s, which is 0.73s in 9 minutes is pretty good. But overall, he's not in a situation where we need to be too worried about Jordan Hamilton from a fantasy point of view. An interesting player is CJ Wilcox. And I say interesting because he's another shooting guard on this team, and a first-round pick the Clippers made last season, and he just didn't really show anything at all. Even when they were calling out for a bench guy, look, he's competing with Dante Jones, with Jordan Hamilton, Lester Hudson. He's competing with these guys, Austin Rivers at times, and he couldn't bring it at all. He averaged just 2 points a game, 0.3 threes, 0.3 rebounds, 0.4 assists, 0.1 steals. Good thing is he didn't miss a free throw all season, but even if you extrapolate those numbers out to per 36, they look okay. 14.7 points, 2.5 triples, 3 assists, 2.5 rebounds, 1 steal. They're okay numbers, but he only played 5 minutes a game in his 21 games. He needs a bigger role. He needs a much bigger role for us to have any sort of interest in him. In saying that, though, I'm not 100% thinking he's a bust by any stretch. I think that in this situation, now Stevenson definitely complicates it, but in a couple of years' time, we could see CJ Wilcox jump himself into a bigger role. When Jamal Crawford is, you know, not necessarily pushing retirement, but really on the way down, if the Clippers don't exercise Lance Stevenson's team option for next season, that's another guy out of the rotation. You know, we won't have Jordan Hamilton around. Lester Hudson won't be around. You know, JJ Redick will still be there, but we could see Wilcox pushing into a bigger role. So it'd be a dynasty investment for a couple of seasons, but it's not completely stupid to look at CJ Wilcox for a couple of seasons' time. Nothing for this season, though. I don't see anything coming from him, except I expect some improvement, but I don't see that he'll be in a big enough role to have any sort of real impact. All right, let's move on to the wing players here. And because I've already tackled the Charlotte Hornets, I'm going to have to tackle Matt Barnes here, even though he won't be playing for this team. He won't be playing for the Hornets either, most likely. The reports are that he is going to be bought out by them. And he was a guy that was definitely underrated last season. He's a guy who people hated on a lot. And because he started off the season disgracefully, to be honest, he played 76 games. He played 30 minutes a game. And in Roto Leagues, he was really handy. He was 69th overall for total value. But even in head-to-head leagues, he was 125. So that means that your 12-team leagues needed to look at Barnes consistently. And if you're in anything deeper, like a 14-team league, he's a must-own guy. He only averaged 10 points a game, but almost two triples. Four rebounds a game, a steal, 0.7 blocks, 44 and 78. So they're really solid percentages as well. And he's not a, if you're playing in a nine-category league, he gets you no turnover. So there's a big, big bonus there with him as well. But he's a guy who is hated on a lot because he has bad, bad nights. But he has really consistent... No, that's not... He consistently has bigger nights and then has bad ones intermingled, if that makes any sense at all. So depending on where he lands, it's going to have a big factor on where he's taken for fantasy drafts. But if he gets minutes, you know you're going to get good rebound numbers, good threes, decent steals, okay blocks, solid percentages, and you know below average scoring. He's going to have some sort of impact. It was all set up for him, though, in Los Angeles in terms of there was no one battling to take minutes off him. No one was getting minutes away from Matt Barnes because they had no bench. Now, depending on where he goes, it's unlikely he's going to slot in as a starter and play 30 minutes. So his run as a standard league fantasy guy is probably done at this point. We have to wait and see, though, of course. A guy who's officially done pretty much is Hedo Turkoglu. He's an unrestricted free agent next season. He gave us nothing as a player. 11 minutes a game, 3.7 points. He hit a three a game, which was handy, but otherwise, it's unlikely he gets re-signed. I'd be shocked if he got re-signed by Los Angeles, and I'd be shocked if he caught on with another team. I don't think there's much that Hedo Turkoglu has to offer the league at this point in his career. Let's talk Blake Griffin now, who started off the season very, very slowly. I think that's fair. I don't think I'm being harsh on Griffin. He was not good to start the season. He dropped his game horribly. And if you look at his overall season numbers, they're not ideal. He ended up as the 26th ranked player in head-to-head leagues. And his Roto and head-to-head value is pretty much identical at this point. He's ranking at 24 post-All-Star is still the same, so there's no big improvement. The improvement came in the playoffs. But what we saw from him during the season, he scored 22 points a game. That's a drop of two points from the year before. 7.6 rebounds, the lowest amount in his career. That's a 2-rebound drop from the year before. His steal numbers dropped from 1.2 to 0.9. He only blocks 0.5 a game, which is not good for a power forward. But what he did is he increased his assist numbers from 3.9 to 5.3 and became a really elite ball handler, basically. A guy who could run the ball up the court, dribble the ball, distribute the ball, do a lot of things for this team. He did miss a big chunk of time with that elbow issue, and he ended up playing 67 games. But overall, his numbers, they weren't quite as elite as they were the year before. He dropped his field goal percentage down to 50. That was his lowest field goal percentage in his career. His free throw percentage, though, is trending in the right direction, up to 73. He's no longer a punt free throw percentage guy anymore. You can still use him in that sort of build, but he's not a guy where, like, if you draft Griffin, you need to punt free throws, which he was a couple of seasons ago. Like, we look back to his 2011-12 campaign. He shot 52% on 7 attempts. That's pretty much impossible to come back from. So he's not at that point now. He's shooting 73% on six attempts a game, which is not great, but it's easily recoverable from. Those past seasons, not so much. And that's a real testament to him and the effort he's put in terms of improving those free throws, because now it's not a concern. I don't have really any concern with Blake Griffin. I don't think he's going to go back to being a 50% shooter or anything like that. You know, what he's been doing is really impressive. Now, in the playoffs, he was a different guy. He was on another level. He averaged 25.5 points, 12.5 rebounds, over 6 assists, a steal a game, a block a game, shooting 72% again from the free throw line, 51 from the field. He was a complete different guy. Is this who Blake Griffin is next season? Well, it's going to be hard to tell. Like, he did this in 40 minutes a game, so he's not going to play 40 minutes a game. Let's bring that, get that back. If you bring his numbers back down to per 36, he's at 23, 11.5, 5.5, 0.9 steals, 0.9 blocks, which is still great and still better than his regular season, but not quite those ridiculous numbers, what he was actually putting up in 40 minutes a game. Where do we look to target Blake Griffin next season? I think that's probably the question most people want to know at this point. Now, let's... I had a question about Blake Griffin. We'll talk about that now. It comes from Jasmine, who's on Instagram at jsierra_b. Her question is, assuming DeAndre Jordan stays, who would you take first, Blake Griffin or DJ if they're available in the second round? going to touch on DeAndre Jordan very soon, Jasmine, but it depends a lot. Are you punting free throws? Then it's Jordan. If you're not, then it's Griffin. I'm happy with taking Griffin at the end of the second round overall. I don't think you want to take him. I don't want to take him at pick 10 or pick 12 or pick 14 or anywhere like that. But anywhere from sort of 15 onwards, I think is a pretty good spot for Blake Griffin. I said he finished about 26th last season. So you'd think he'd take somewhat of a step forward, but I don't think it's going to be a massive step forward. To get from 26 to 10 is a big jump. Even though the numbers might not seem like they're big, it is a big jump to get that far. So I don't really think he's up to that level, and he's not going to keep on those playoff heroics going all season. That's a pretty big ask, as good as he did look. And basically, he's been almost the best player throughout the whole playoffs, even though he hasn't played the last two rounds. That's how good his numbers were. But does he warrant a pick that early? I'm going to say no at this point. I just don't think that he... I just don't think that he's worth picking inside that top 10 or inside that top 12. It just doesn't feel right to me. The question I should have touched on earlier, and it comes from Barry Baker, the podcast question maker. Do you reckon Austin Rivers can start getting 10 points a game? No. No, I don't. I think that the trade, admittedly this was asked before Stevenson came across, I think that that is going to impact Rivers' ability. So no, I don't think that Rivers will become a 10-point per game scorer. Let's look now at the other power forward on the roster, and that is my man, big baby Glenn Davis. And when I say my man, I say my man in the most ironic sense, because he is brutal. He is just should not be in the league. He ranked as 396th in per game head-to-head value last season. 4 points, 2.3 rebounds, 46 and 63. He should not be brought back by this team. He should not be brought back by any team. We do not need to consider Glenn Davis for any sort of fantasy value. Let's talk DeAndre Jordan now. Probably the biggest exponent of the punting strategy, or maybe Dwight Howard, maybe Andre Drummond, but Griffin was phenomenal last season. In head-to-head per game value, he was the 9th-ranked player. In head-to-head total value, he was the 5th-ranked player. Now, he's that high because he played 82 games, but he was 5th in head-to-head total value. In roto value, he was 96th. That's a big drop-off. And to me, the rankings all come through from numbers. 96 is probably even too high, to be honest with me, because the fact that he shot 39.7% on almost 6 attempts a game is basically impossible to come back from, and getting a 1 in a roto league is really hard to come back from. It can be done, but geez, it's hard, and everything needs to break your way. Otherwise, his numbers are great. 11.5 points, 15 boards. Yeah, he gets a steal a game, 2.2 blocks. He had shot 71% from the field. That is huge. That's like, but you know what we need to take into consideration? That's huge, but 71% from the field is still only half as impactful as his negative impact the free throws have. So you look at 71, you go, yeah, look, he bumps me up that much in terms of my field goal percentage. But in order to have the same positive effect on field goal percentage, you'd need 2 DeAndre Jordans to have the same impact as what his negative free throw percentage impact is. That's maybe that sounded a bit confusing. It makes sense in my head, but you need 2 DeAndre Jordans shooting 71% on 6.5 attempts a game to make, you know, to have the same positive impact in field goal percentage than you would to make up for his negative free throw percentage impact. That's why he's really hard to roster in a roto league. Now, we know that he's an upcoming free agent. We've heard of all these talks of him not getting along with Chris Paul because he won't improve his free throws, and are the Clippers going to max him out? Are they going to sign and trade him? The trade, and you're talking of the sign and trade for him and Tyson Chandler. The Clippers have to max him out. I'm sure that they will do everything they can to do it. He fits what they do perfectly. They're playing next to Blake Griffin, playing with Chris Paul. They don't use him on offense. It's all putbacks and alley-oops, and that's fine. He doesn't need to take shots, and that's why he shoots such a high percentage. He's about getting rebounds in big quantities, about getting blocks in big quantities, about giving you field goal percentage in big quantities, and he gives you a nice number of steals. One steal a game is good too, and that's why he's a real valuable guy in head-to-head, because he just plumps up those categories to, you know, huge, huge amounts. 15 rebounds a game is massive. That is a huge amount of rebounds. That means you can you know, skimp on rebounds with other players and afford to not concentrate as heavily on that area. Same with his block, same with his field goal percentage. He's almost worth 2 centers. That's how good these values are, and that is why he's so high up in the head-to-head rankings. Now, another question about DeAndre Jordan came in on Twitter from Jason Elson at Jason_M_Elson. If he stays with the Clips, is Jordan worth a second round pick in a keeper league if you are punting free throws? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. He was a top 10 player last year if you're punting free throws. He is absolutely a second round pick. I've got no doubt about that. Now, I'd probably still have him below Andre Drummond, but I think Drummond is a second round pick in terms of their value. But there's a case to be made that you can see Drummond and Jordan slip to the third round, and I think that's a real bargain. But in terms of value, if you want to make sure you get them, take them in the second round. We're talking Jordan specifically here. Yep, go ahead. I've absolutely no problem with taking him in that spot. Spencer Hawes, he was a bust and a half. He was terrible coming across to the Clippers after a really good season in both Cleveland and Philadelphia last season. He really struggled. He wasn't used very well, I didn't think, by Doc. 18 minutes a night, only almost 6 points, almost a three, 3.5 rebounds, 0.7 blocks. Percentages really suffered. He shot less than 40%, 39%, 65% from the free throw line. His numbers were down dramatically, and it just did not fit well at all for him. Like, it did not fit. Everything dropped. His field goal percentage dropped 6%. His free throw percentage dropped 14%. I think that a lot of that is just the way that he felt on this team. His three-point percentage dropped 10%. Everything dropped. It's unfair to look at his other counting stats and go, yeah, they dropped because his minutes were almost half. But even on a per 36 basis, 15 points versus 12, 1.9 threes versus 1.6, 9.6 rebounds versus 7.3. His assists down from 3.5 to 2.5. They're significant drops in all those categories. He wasn't comfortable. Does he stay in Charlotte? Maybe. Now, what happens for him in Charlotte? Al Jefferson said he's opting in. I don't think that Spencer Hawes can really play the four, but he will play as an offensive guy that, yeah, I would say should get 25 minutes a game. And that means that 14 team leagues would want to take a look at him. Anyone else? Probably not at this point. Unless we have to see how it sort of shakes out in Charlotte and see exactly what happens with the roster. Cody Zeller, Noah Vonleh, Bismack Biyombo, Jason Maxiell, what they do in the draft. They've all these big men. This is just a melange of big men there in Charlotte, and we don't know how it's all going to work out. But one thing's for sure is they need someone who's an offensive-minded big man to come off the bench, because Biyombo there is not going to do it in that stretch. Whether they even keep Hawes is another matter. We have to wait and see what they do with Spencer Hawes, but I don't think he's going to have much standard league impact next season. Epe Udo, who has had a lot of injury problems, and that has obviously impacted his career, because he was a guy that I did like, you know, quite a lot as a player, but he averaged just 4 minutes a night here. Did not top averages of over one in any statistical category. Shot some pretty good percentages though, 46 and 78, but on such minimal quantities that we don't need to be too worried about him. Although, if he was healthy, I think he's a really good player. It just, I don't think he's ever going to be healthy again. So, Epe Udo, I wouldn't be holding out hope that he's going to become good again. That does it for today's podcast on the Los Angeles Clippers. Remember to check out the NBA Draft podcast coming up with myself and Ed Isaacson of NBC Sports, Roto World, NBA Draft Blog, over on Fansided, quite a few things that he does there. There'll be the last three of these season in review podcasts coming up, the Atlanta Hawks, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Golden State Warriors, and then myself, Matt Smith, and Mark Roberts are doing an NBA mock draft coming up on this weekend as well, which you can check out when it comes out, obviously. Follow me on all the social media areas, leave a review and a ranking on iTunes and Stitcher, and of course, please go ahead and support the YouTube channel, trying to grow that, and it's great when you go and watch those videos, because that's a way of helping the podcast, is watching those videos, helping it grow, getting some revenue coming in to help, you know, keep everything happening here, keep the computers switched on and all that sort of stuff, and the microphones lit up. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.